Welcome. This is the Advisor Pact monthly session. This is the time we get together each month. And well, frankly, I just picked the questions that came in during the month that I think are going to be the most useful to you. And we go through them. So as we go through these questions, if you have questions that pop into your mind as we go through this, I'll try to keep an eye on that. And we'll coach you live if you've got enough questions. The whole purpose of the Advisor Pact monthly program is to help you implement. Now, the program was initially designed to focus on client service, but as of January of this year, we've been expanding into client acquisition as well. It's just something that I think is so difficult to teach and coach. I'm talking about acquiring clients that I have my doubts whether it can be done this way, just sort of walking you through it. But it could work if you would agree that every time you encounter some sort of an obstacle, that you will get back with me. You'll tell me what you're struggling with and you'll let me work through it with you. So that's how this program works. So let me just kind of show you the questions that I selected for this month. What I typically do is just show them to you up front so that you can decide if these are questions that you're facing. You can establish, how valuable this time is based on the types of issues that we're going to be covering. But I'm going to start at the top and we're going to walk through them one at a time. So the first question is, I got this question from a new member who had been through, I say a new member to the Advisor Pact monthly program, actually a relatively new member. I would say maybe 6 months in the program. And the comment or question is, I cannot afford to hire a team of subject matter experts right now. So how do I serve my clients? And he went sort of on and on explaining about his clients, but in essence, he's got, about 30 non-ideal clients. In other words, if I can't afford a team right now, how do I serve my non-ideal clients in the meantime? Okay, so if you're brand new to the program, this may be new to you. What you're looking at here is the deliverables team structure that we recommend in this program. And it's more than recommend. I would say if this is not something that you are planning to do, which is to say build a team of subject matter experts along the lines of what you're seeing up on the screen right now, well, this program's not for you. The whole benefit of this program, well, let me back up. Is when it comes to client service, what are we trying to achieve in this program? We are trying to achieve straight up. We're trying to achieve the point where you are consistently exceeding all of your clients' expectations. All right. How do we measure that? We measure that by unsolicited client referrals. So the way we measure success in this program, when it comes to client services, you're going to be serving your clients at such a high level that they just can't resist. They're going to be recommending you to their friends when you're not around. You're going to start receiving unsolicited client referrals. So that's what this program is about. Now, the question becomes, how do you consistently exceed your clients' expectations? Well, I've been doing this 40 years, and if there was a different or better way to do this, I would know about it. What I have found and what we teach in this program is you do not offer your services as a one-man band. What you do is you go out and you build a deep bench. You build a team of subject matter experts in five areas of personal finance. So tax, money management, financial planning, legal, meaning estate planning. And I call it insurance on this chart, but it's really safety. It's risk and safety. So you want somebody on your team. Yes, of course, they're going to review the insurance for a client. But what they're really looking at, and the reason I'm saying it this way is because it is a different set of skills than just insurance. You need to have someone that is skilled at being able to look at the overarching strategy for the client and look at the client and their risks that are facing them in their life. And we need somebody in that insurance spot that can create a plan to increase the safety of the plan. In other words, we're going to create a plan for the client, and then we're going to have this risk and safety expert on your team create a strategy that will further increase the safety of the plan. Okay, so notice that it says the team is free. Well, that is true. I guess in business, everything's free. I mean, I think they're talking about, I'm not really sure what they mean when they say, I can't afford to build a team right now. Let me tell you how I think about it and tell me if this doesn't make sense to you. The team is free, and let's take them. There's kind of three categories of clients, and I'll walk through them one at a time. So let's talk about new ideal clients. Let's say tomorrow you acquire a new ideal client. Well, if you can't afford to build a team, you're kind of screwed, right? I mean, it's kind of a panic moment where you've acquired a client. You've explained what you're able and willing to do, what you're trying to do for the client. They say, yes, count me in. So they start paying you big money to do this. If you don't have your team already in place, this is going to be a panic moment. But I think you would agree, if you get a new ideal client tomorrow, the client is paying for the team. In other words, the money that you're going to be receiving upfront and over the first few months, in other words, you're going to be getting money from this ideal client at a pace that's quick enough to be able to pay for the team. So the ideal clients are going to pay for your team of subject matter experts. So in when it comes to ideal clients, I don't understand the question. What we are recommending is you go out, and we have a methodology. We have a 12-step deliverables team recruitment process where we fill your team with highly skilled subject matter experts. And if you go out and you find these team members and you fill these vacancies, these five vacancies, what you're going to tell them is, you know, I'm not going to start paying you today. I'm not putting you on salary. And keep in mind, these team members are often working elsewhere. You know, for example, your tax SME is probably going to be a partner at one of the most skilled local tax firms. So they've got their tax firm that they work at. They've got their clients, so they're busy with them. But they are skilled and they like the idea of what you're talking about in terms of building this team to serve the clients. And they agree to serve your clients in the area of tax. All right. So your tax subject matter expert is a partner in a local tax firm. So you're going to tell them, I'm not going to pay you on salary. It's when I acquire an ideal client, I'll call you in. I need you to start working then. So it's when there's clients, there will be money, I will pay you. And I will give you specific instructions of what I need from you. Same goes for estate planning SMEs. I think in all of my offices, every estate planning SME has been an estate planning lawyer who's a partner in a local law firm. Okay. So you get the picture. I mean, these are not salaried people sitting there hanging out in your office getting paid salary. That's not how this works. You go out and you find experts. For most of you, it ends up being contract labor. Now, I will say that in my case, and we do recommend this, is, you know, at some point there's a break even where it's less expensive for you to bring all these subject matter experts in-house and pay them salary. But the good news is you're not going to have to worry about that until you get to 25, 30, 35 ideal clients and more. For me, it was 50 ideal clients. When I got to the point where I had 50 ideal clients, then I realized I would be better off financially if I brought these SMEs in-house, paid them salary. But do you see how that's not something you even need to worry about now? We recommend go out, find highly skilled SMEs. They're already doing what we're asking them to do for your clients. They're already doing them out there in the world. They're doing their work. You just deploy them when you acquire a client. So in the case of a new ideal client, the SMEs are free, meaning that when you have a client, now you have money, now you'll pay them. Okay, what about transitioning to non-ideal clients? Let me take non-ideal clients a little bit slowly. Let's say you come across a non-ideal client tomorrow. Now, let's pause a minute. Should you take non-ideal clients? Let me tell you what we recommend. And our flagship program is the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. This program, the Advisor Pack Monthly, is I'll share everything with you from the toolkit. It's just that the toolkit is software where you enter potential clients. You know, as you come across clients and potential clients, you enter their names into the software. And it costs $1,000 a month. So this program is really all of the content in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. I'm willing to share all of it. And so what we recommend in the toolkit when it comes to non-ideal clients is this. Since you built this team, tax, money management, financial planning, legal, insurance, you've got these experts in five separate areas of finance. That means that, you know, if you're like all of the advisors that we're dealing with, you don't have enough ideal clients to keep them busy. And in other words, I had more ideal clients than anybody we're currently working with, in that my goal was to acquire 100 ideal clients, and I did. Is that your goal? If you're like many of the advisors we're working with, you don't have a goal to acquire anywhere near 100. But I will tell you, even at 100, the team of SMEs, these five experts, they could handle more than 100 clients between them. So what I'm saying is, once you've built your team, you have a capacity issue. You have more capacity with your team than you currently need with your clients. So in the toolkit, what do we recommend? Let's say you're sitting down talking business with a potential client. Turns out they do not meet your ideal client profile, but they could afford to create, to pay you to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, which is our terminology for a financial plan. We never call it a financial plan. If anything, shorthand, we call it an overarching plan or an overarching strategy. So if you come across someone that doesn't meet your ideal client profile, but they're willing to pay you $10,000 or $20,000 to create a plan, and they've got the money to do it, it's not going to harm them in any way. They've got ample money. Well, we would say accept that non-ideal client. Now, when I say transition non-ideal clients, I'm talking about whatever you've been doing for non-ideal clients in the past, stop that. Or I'm not sure what you're doing, but I think stop that. What I'm talking about is, yes, accept non-ideal clients, but we recommend just to create their financial strategy, their overarching strategy, and then you have no future obligations to them. So you're not meeting with them regularly or anything like that. I think you would agree that kind of a transition going forward to a non-ideal client, that you just create their overarching plan. That's it. No further obligations. That's very clean. You just earn $10,000 or $20,000 off that individual. And then, of course, if they come back, we would recommend that they update their plan every year. But, you know, let's say they only come back every 3 to 5 years. That's fine. They pay you $10,000 to $20,000 whenever they come in and update their plan. Other than that, you have no obligations to them. They are responsible for implementing all the action items and recommendations that are created as a result of you generating this overarching strategy for them. But that's it. Now, don't panic. Some of you are saying, yeah, but you know, why wouldn't I manage their money? I mean, I'm used to charging a percentage of assets under management. Why not just dump them into my, you know, my plan with my turnkey asset management program that I use at Fidelity or Schwab? I'm saying you could do that. I'm just saying we recommend that you don't. I would say most advisors do. They create the plan for 10 or 20 grand. And by the way, if you're new to the program and you're thinking, what on earth does a financial plan look like that the client feels is worth $20,000 or worth more than $20,000? And I would say, we go back in these work, these monthly sessions, search for that. Because we have periodically, like several times a year, I go step by step through what a plan looks like the way we recommend it. And it is, we've got data on this. It's a data-driven strategy. We kept fiddling with the format until in our data, every single affluent client that we surveyed said, oh yeah, that's worth more than $20,000. So we know that the format of the plan, the overarching plan that we recommend that you create in the format we recommend you create it, it's worth 20,000 or more. So you should always charge 10 or 20,000. If you choose to have an ongoing client, well, okay, it's a slippery slope. I'm just saying now you're opening yourself up to distractions down the line and so forth, but it's your business. Do what you want. All right. But the point I'm getting at is consider what I'm asking, that you're transitioning from whatever you used to do for non-ideal clients to now, at least think about it. What if when you, you know, what if you had five people a month that are paying you $20,000 for a plan? Are you telling me that you need way more than that as far as extra revenue? And I know many advisors think of this, but why wouldn't I just manage their money? Well, there's a very good answer to that. You can talk to me all you want, blah, 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 blah. They're not a distraction. They're so easy to manage. Look, I had 1,242 clients. 1,225 of them were non-ideal clients. Nobody will ever convince me that having ongoing relationships where you have ongoing responsibilities to deliver services to ongoing non-ideal clients, you will never, ever, ever persuade me that they're not a distraction. You can talk all you want. I've been there. I've done that. I've lived it. And that's why I recommend what I recommend. But that's what we recommend. I just ask that you consider it. Consider transitioning into non-ideal clients. You just create a plan for them, a strategy, and you charge $20,000. I think you have to charge more than 10 because this format is worth more than 20. So it starts to beg the issue. It's not an issue of whether you do or don't have adequate market in your area. This is worth more than $20,000 to the client. The fact that you would charge less than 10 is just beyond my imagination. So don't do it. I'd say always charge between 10 and 20 and closer to 20 than 10. Okay, that's my recommendation. Now, the question is with the third set of clients, what do we do with survival clients? Let's call them the existing non-ideal clients. Like, what do I do with all my clients that I currently have that, you know, I didn't build in the price of a team to serve them? I think this is what he's talking about. I don't have money right now to build a team to serve my existing survival clients. Well, that I get. What I recommend is that you continue serving your existing survival clients with your existing team. Oftentimes, it's just the advisor. And if that's what it is, you manage your clients using some kind of financial planning software, and you're it. You're a one-man band. Well, keep doing that. What I did was I put all those existing survival clients on a spreadsheet, and I sorted them by how much revenue is coming in from each client. And I noticed at the bottom of the list, there were a lot of non-ideal clients that I had zero or very, 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 very little revenue coming in annually. So just keep that list in front of you. And then as you acquire a new ideal client, or as somebody pays you $20,000 for a plan, well, while you're at it, now you've got this new revenue coming in. Now go over to the bottom of the list with your current, your existing survival clients. Start at the bottom of the list and give them a choice. They can either begin paying $10,000 or $20,000 just for whenever they renew the plan. Doesn't have to be every year, but you know, you recommend every year. But if they wanted to just come in and update it every 3 years, 5 years, whenever they feel like things have changed significantly, then that's the new plan. And if they say yes, well, you've got another plan to create, but this time from a paying survival client. Now they're going to be paying instead of whatever they were paying you. You stop that and you get them to pay for the $10,000 or $20,000 strategy. So your team creates the same overarching strategy they do for every client, including your ideal clients. So they're paying the same for the plan. They get the plan from you and your team, and then you have no future obligations to them. And then as you acquire an ideal client, boy, you can knock off several off the bottom of your existing survival client list by going that way, by politely disengaging from non-ideal survival clients. Every time I acquired a new client or had new revenue coming in, by me going through the existing list of survival clients from the bottom up, I was able to politely disengage from 1,225 non-ideal clients in a way that I never saw my quarterly revenue change. Yes, my monthly revenue fluctuated a little bit, but over any rolling 3-month period, I had increasing revenue through my entire experience. So you can get from where you are now to where you want to be with new ideal client revenue, new planning revenue from future non-ideal clients, and slowly but surely transition all your current survival clients off of the current system and onto a system where they are paying for your team to update their comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy every so often. But you don't have any obligations to them until they come and they want to pay you to update that strategy. All right, enough on that. I apologize to some of you for this. We have covered this every single month. But, you know, going back at least 3 or 4 months. So my apologies. However, this question right here represented 6 people's questions. So I don't know how to explain it to you other than I think this idea of client acquisition is critically important to a lot of you. I am explaining it every month. And I'm just going to go under this. I'm going to explain the same concepts, but a little bit differently this month in the hopes that it makes sense. And so I guess it bothers me that we answer the same question every month and then we still get the question coming in. So the question is, Mark, I've heard you discuss client acquisition by establishing personal relationships with potential clients first. Could you fly through your methodology from a high level? Didn't you say there are 3 skills or projects for this client acquisition methodology of yours? Okay, there's where I think the confusion is right there. I think what you're confusing are the 3 projects that you need to master to be successful in this industry, and those are lead generation, lead conversion, and client service. Those are the 3 projects that I often talk about that you have to master. Let me fly through them and then I'll answer your question about client acquisition. What you're calling client acquisition is really, I think, what I would call lead generation. So it's just quick definition. I'll go back and explain it a little more thoroughly. But lead generation is your skill at having ample people to talk to. If I were to say lead generation in a different way, I would say lead generation is your ability, your skill and ability to always have more people who want to talk business with you than you have time for, okay? That's the bottom line. So you are skilled in lead generation when you're generating enough, more leads than you can follow up with, okay? So that's at least how I defined it. Lead conversion, that's actually converting a potential client into an actual paying client. And client service is what this program's always been about, the Advisor Pack Monthly program. It's about consistently exceeding clients' expectations. Okay, so let's take them one at a time. Lead generation. This is what I cover every single month. I think this is what you're calling client acquisition. I certainly do. I call client acquisition the ability to generate leads and in excess of what I have time to follow up with. In other words, I've got more people who want to sit down and talk business with me than I have time to deal with. And then lead conversion is, and the skill to actually convert them if they meet the client profile, if they meet my profile, my skill at being able to convert a potential ideal client into an actual paying client. All right, this is what I keep going over every month. There are four skills, not projects, skills. There are three projects: lead generation, lead conversion, and client service that you master. These are four skills that are wrapped up in what I'm calling lead generation. Now, the methodology is a really that I've named it the greatest marketing machine ever devised for financial advisors, GMME. But what that is four skills, all right? So skill number one, ample people. Do you have enough people to talk to? Well, in my methodology, the skill is getting people you know to introduce you to people that you don't know. The metric that I follow myself and the metric that I recommend that you follow if you use my methodology. Again, my methodology is to acquire clients through personal relationships, as he said in his question, not through sales tactics, not through any kind of sales techniques, no closing skills, no appointment setting techniques, no sales tactics whatsoever. To me, it's all about developing personal relationships with people. And then you'll see how it all ties together. So first is, do I have enough people to talk to? Like friends, colleagues, associates, business acquaintances. Do I have enough people on the list that I could interact with, non-clients, all right? So as I said, the skill for ample people is getting people you know to introduce you to people that you don't know. The metric is 20 per week. My goal is, let's put it this way, I am missing my target if I don't get introduced to at least 20 new people per week. Not cold calling, not going out knocking on doors, not, you know, not any other way than I get my friends to introduce me to people. I get the people I know to introduce me to the people that I don't know. That's the skill. And it's 20 per week. If I don't get 20 per week, I have missed my target. My personal goal is 100 a month. So I want to grow at 100 a month. Now, notice it says 2 weeks on there. This is for people that don't have enough people to talk to. I'm working with an advisor right now, two advisors. They just moved from outside the state to Denver, Colorado. So they know next to nobody in this new town. They're new to the community. They know very few people. But let me ask you this. If you were so good at getting the people you know to introduce you to the people that you don't know, that every week you're meeting 20 new people, then within 2 weeks, you have 40 people that you can start meeting with just to catch up and develop a relationship. I'm talking about when you meet with these people, there is zero ulterior business motive. When I meet with these people, I purely meet with them on personal affairs. It's like I'm just meeting with them to deepen a personal relationship, not any business ulterior motive whatsoever. Well, after I've got 40 new people on my list, if I get 20 a week, by the time I have 40, I've got plenty of people to talk to. You follow me? That's ample people. So that's skill number one, ample people. Momentum. All right. I've kind of toyed around with this over the decades. Like, what do you actually need to do in terms of if you're going to acquire clients just by deepening relationships, just meeting with friends and catching up with them? Okay. Then what is the, how many people do you need to be meeting with to actually make this a business project? Well, adequate momentum is minimum of 10 non-clients a week. So for you to have minimum momentum, the skill you need to develop is that without fail, you are sitting down to catch up as a friend with at least 10 people a week. My goal was always 20 per week, but the minimum is 10. So what's the skill? The skill is you need to have adequate momentum. You have to have enough people in the pipeline that you're working with to make this work. And that is 10. So, okay, then, how many consecutive weeks have you met with 10 non-clients for personal reasons, just to catch up with them? How many consecutive weeks have you met with at least 10 per week without fail? Well, that becomes the key metric. And if you think about it, it's like I would grab coffee with someone at 10 in the morning, maybe 2 in the afternoon, 5 days a week. That's 10 a week. It's not that, it doesn't interfere with client service. It doesn't interfere with anything. I put together a system because, as you will recall, I had 1,225 non-ideal clients. I had a lot going on in my business. I could not let new client acquisition consume all my time. Although I will tell you, you should be spending over 50% of your time on client acquisition, this whole GMME process. So you're meeting with 10 minimum per week. M101 relationships. What does that mean? Well, marketing 101. When I was in college, marketing 101 said this, like when you take a class in marketing. Marketing is ask a question. So marketing asks a question about you and your business. And the question is this: how many people in your community who meet your ideal client profile, how many of them know your name and they know what you do? And they know that what you do is better than anybody else who does what you do. All right. So if that's marketing 101, what's the answer? So you tell me, how many people currently in your community, just give me a number. How many people do you know? How many people in your community do they know about you, your name? They know clearly what you do, and they understand that you do what you do better than anybody else in town, so that they could share that with other people. Like if you weren't around, they could be part of an army of marketers out there. If a friend of theirs asked them about some financial issue, they'd say, well, I don't know, but here's Mark Little, here's what he does, here's what makes him better than anybody else. Like, how many people out there would you say that do that? Well, in my world, marketing 101 relationships means that everybody that I develop a personal relationship, even though I have no ulterior motive in sitting down with people to catch up on personal stuff, what if, regardless of that, slowly but surely, after the fourth time I've met with them, they actually understand crystal clear what I do and what makes me better than everyone else, so that I can add them to the list. So I, could you say what I say, which is I've got thousands of people in my community who know my name, know what I do, and know that what I do is better than anybody else who does what I do in this community. Okay. That's what marketing 101 relationships are. Are you interacting with people in such a way that they really understand what you do and what makes you better? Okay. And then the fourth skill is never missing an opportunity. It sounds simple, but with advisors that I work with one-on-one, this ends up being the biggest issue that we end up having to work with most advisors. And that means if you're meeting with people just to catch up on personal stuff and you're deepening a relationship with an individual, then can you honestly say that if they dropped a little hint that they've got some financial issue going on, or maybe they know someone who has a significant financial issue going on in their life, would you pick up on it? Like, can you honestly say that you would, if you're just chatting with a friend, can you honestly say that you never miss an opportunity if they're kind of throwing out even a subliminal hint that maybe they'd like to sit down and talk business with you, or they'd like to refer you to someone that is having a significant financial issue? But regardless, would you notice the opportunity? Would you never let it pass without skillfully dealing with it? And do you know what to say? Like, do you have the set of communication skills that when someone gives you an opportunity, like if they say something as innocuous as, if I were to ask, have you ever known a couple that doesn't see eye to eye on finances. Like if I were to ask that in a personal conversation with a friend, if they replied and said, me and my spouse, we bicker about money from time to time, would you recognize that as potentially an opportunity that they might want to sit down and talk business with you? I'm not saying they do, but do you have the skill to stop, deal with it, determine whether they are wanting to sit down and deal with this issue with you at the office on a professional level or not? And that's what I mean, never miss an opportunity. It's a skill. So these are the four skills. If you have ample people to talk to, meaning you are highly skilled at getting people you know to introduce you to people that you don't know, you're meeting with at least 10 people per week, you are making sure that every person you interact with, all your friends and colleagues and business associates, you know, after the fourth time you've interacted with them about personal stuff, you know, they could clearly articulate what you do and what makes you better. And then number four, can you honestly say you have the skill of never missing an opportunity? Or if you don't miss it, do you know what to do with it? Like, do you have the skill to deal with it? So that's me going over it again. The whole process takes 12 weeks. The most common question I get is, if I'm new to Denver and I don't know anybody, when could this methodology, because it sounds so involved and it just takes months and years to develop relationships and have them turn into business. No, it's 12 weeks. It takes 2 weeks to get enough people to talk to. And then it takes 12 weeks of momentum. So you're meeting with 10 a week. After meeting with 10 a week for 12 weeks, 90 days, okay, you will have generated revenue. I mean, if you don't, there's a problem. There's a problem with your skill. So these are the four skills. You can get this whole thing up and running in 12 weeks or less. And a little bit of it's serendipitous. Like, you know, if somebody's got a financial issue that they want to talk with, I mean, we can't force that. But I'm telling you, over 12 weeks, if you're meeting with a minimum of 10 people per week, that's 40 a month. Okay, so you are meeting with so many people, the odds that either they have a significant financial issue that they'd like to talk to you about, or they know someone that they care about that's going through a really significant financial issue, the odds over 12 weeks that somebody will get in front of you as a result of this process to sit down and talk business, there will be enough of that to generate revenue. So I hope this answers the question. That's lead generation. The next step is lead conversion. That is our good friend, Bill Bachrach. We utilize the financial roadmap for converting a potential ideal client into an actual paying client. If you don't know what I'm talking about, if you don't know what the financial roadmap is, just contact us through the system. I will get you in touch with Bill Bachrach's organization. He has a virtual training platform. Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap is the best lead conversion tool that exists in the financial services industry, bar none. I've looked at all of them, and Bill's is not only the best, but it is perfectly aligned with the bigger clients. So the larger and the more successful the potential client, the more the financial roadmap appeals to them. So anyway, that's lead conversion. And then of course, client service, what do we do for that? Well, that's this program. It's making an advisor pact pledge to every new ideal client. PACT is an acronym where you pledge, you know, I will protect you, I will pay close attention, I will coordinate all the financial people and financial products in your life, and with full transparency so that you know exactly what you're paying, which these are the four client expectations that I've got data on this. That these, if you can deliver on all four of these things, you'll be the only game in town. You cannot find an advisor willing to deliver on all four of these fronts. All right. You will find advisors to deliver on one of these four very commonly that can actually deliver on one of these four. You just bump that up to any two of these four And you've cut the list down to 10%. There are not 10% of advisors out there willing to commit, like guarantee any two of these four. And if you will step up, and step up means really understand what you're promising here. Like, it's one thing to promise, but you don't want to be all talk, no action. You have to be able to deliver on these promises. So if you will take the time that's required to understand what these four things mean and to step up to actually resolve that, I know it's hard work to deliver on these four things, but I know that if I do, I'll be the only game in town. Suit up, get in the game, agree to do these four things. And then the only thing that we add on top of these four things is something that we give you as a part of this program. Truly comprehensive financial services is a trademark term, because in our industry, there is no definition of comprehensive financial services. In the financial services industry, the term comprehensive financial services is a marketing term. It doesn't have any agreed upon standardized definition. So what did I do? 2002, when I was being coached by Bill Bachrach, I went out and trademarked the term truly comprehensive financial services. You are, while you're a paid member of our program, you are licensed to use this term with your clients. You need to put the trademark term on there, and you should give attribution to my company, which is Comprehensive Financial Services LLC, or just Mark McKenna Little. But the point is, you are able to use this term. What does this mean? This means that you have committed for every ideal client to, on an annual basis, deliver 10 client deliverables, which are broken down into deliverables checkpoints. I show you in the Advisor Pack Monthly program how to build your team and then to do like I did, get your team to create and establish deliverables checkpoints under each of these 10 client deliverables, so that you have a list of, like a checklist under these 10 client deliverables, so that you can guarantee that on an annual basis, you are delivering all 10 of these deliverables, okay? So that's truly comprehensive financial services. And the 10 client deliverables are also a trademark term, which, as long as you're working with us, you are fully licensed to utilize with clients and potential clients. So there you go. I hope that answers the whole, what is client acquisition? Can you give me the high level view? I just flew through it again, yet again, but just with a little bit different explanation. Okay, this question is, Mark, you send me an email encouraging me to track my business activity each week. What am I looking for? And what he means, it was a longer question, but what he's talking about is on the tracking sheet that I have provided you, and yes, you have this too. I have set up for you and sent you a link to what I call a secure cloud vault, where you can track all the internal things for your business to make sure everything's running like a Swiss watch, my favorite analogy. What if everything in your business ran like a well-oiled machine? Well, I gave you a secure cloud vault, which is nothing more than a Google folder to track all the things that you need to get your business up and running like a well-oiled machine. But what he's talking about is in that secure cloud vault, there is a tracking spreadsheet. This is what it looks like. And if you're not sure where this is, you don't remember ever seeing this, just contact us. Just let me know and I will send you the link. You do have access to it. I've made sure of that. You just need to and it is secure. You just need to ask us for the link again, and we'll be happy to provide it. Let me just see something right here. We had a question that I missed. Okay, let me back up. Okay, Daryl, this is back to, let me go back to client acquisition for a minute. Daryl said, you said existing survival clients either have them pay one time, but you never explained what the other either is. Okay, we don't recommend this, Daryl, But I'll tell you, and it's probably more than half of the advisors that we work with. What I'm saying is, for a new non-ideal client, you say, well, the obvious next step for you is to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. Would you like to hire me to create that strategy for you? It's $20,000, okay? They say yes, and I'm saying, isn't that enough for you? What if, you know, how many of those do you need per month to get out of survival mode? Okay. That's what we recommend. The other either, and what I would say the majority of advisors do, they don't take my advice. What they do do is they take the advice up to and including getting non-ideal clients to pay for the plan. So they're okay with that part of it. But what advisors tend to want to do is, after they've created an overarching plan for a non-ideal client, let's say they don't meet your ideal client profile, but they do have $120,000 just sitting there, you know, that needs help, needs ongoing management. They will put that $120,000 into their turnkey asset management program. They will begin charging a percentage of assets under management on an ongoing basis. And that's what the other either is. That's what most advisors do. But you know, this is the slippery slope. Now you actually have an obligation to meet with them more than just to deliver the plan that they've paid for. You know, what we recommend is, if you do this and you manage their money, it's got to be substantially different service than your ideal client service. It's got to be so much less than you're providing to ideal clients that if a non-ideal client heard about your ideal client service and they saw how much more expensive it was, when they hear what you get as an ideal client, they'd say, oh yeah, I wish I could afford that, because you know that if I had the money, I'd do that hands down. Rather than, what you don't want is to offer so much service to non-ideal clients that they just think they're already getting a portion of that. Like, why not just stay where I'm at? I don't need to pay all that ideal client fee. I'm getting pretty much ideal client light right now. So what we recommend is that you only meet with those, if you do this, which we don't recommend, but if you do, meet with them on a two-meeting process. What it really should be is an annual meeting and a mid-year phone call. And so what's the other difference? Well, if you follow our format for a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, I don't want to get into it in much more detail than this, other than to say, if you have five SMEs, each of them, the expectation is they must, when they're creating a plan for $10,000, $20,000, they are required, it's set as a minimum expectation, they must generate a minimum of 10 impressive action items and recommendations for every plan. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that when you finish the overarching strategy for a non-ideal client, it's going to have a minimum of 50 impressive action items and recommendations from five different SMEs, each of them giving at least 10. Now, I tell my team, yes, 10 is the minimum, but I'm really looking for 15. So and I usually get it. So they're not impressive, but they are what I would call routine. You know, if you went to any expert, you know, there are some routine pieces of advice or recommendations that they would make, no matter how skilled they are. Let's call those routine. So between the impressive ones and the routine ones, I usually do get about 15 per SME, and there's five SMEs. So now you're talking about like 75 action items. Why am I bringing this up? Because there's the dividing line between ideal and non-ideal clients. For ideal clients, you will make sure that everything, all 75 things on the action items gets done. You'll take on that responsibility. Like, I will be responsible for making sure everything that's supposed to get done actually gets done. Did I say you're going to do all that stuff? No, I said you're going to make sure it gets done. So what are you going to do for non-ideal clients? You're just going to generate the list. You're going to hand it to them and you're going to say, here's your list of 75 action items. It is your responsibility to get these things done. And do you have any questions? Because that's part of, you know, they're paying you for the plan. That's it. When you're done with the plan, there's no future obligation. But if you went ahead and accepted their money and started managing $120,000, well, there really should be at least a mid-year review to make sure from a suitability standpoint that nothing significant has changed in their situation. And, you know, that you're looking at things periodically, you probably rebalance or something. So the point is, a mid-year phone call is appropriate. But as far as the plan is concerned, you don't do anything. You, in essence, say, how many of these 75 action items were you able to get done in the last 6 months? And so your job in that mid-year review is accountability coach. So if a non-ideal client pays you $10,000 or $20,000 every single year to update the plan, it's usually not that their situation has changed so much. It's that they intuitively notice that when they meet with you, things get done. You hold them accountable to getting the most important things done, and you will hold them accountable to getting it all done. And so the more they meet with you, the more they are on track to their goals, and they will notice this, or the bright ones will. But if they don't want to pay you to update the plan, well, you know, they're not paying for anything unless you've got money managed of theirs. And that means you've got to meet with them. I'm saying once a year, face-to-face, and then a mid-year phone review. But next year, if they didn't pay to update the plan, it becomes, I would say, a face-to-face meeting that's short. Just hold them accountable to the action items from last year's plan. You just keep holding them accountable to the last plan that you created for them, and that's it. All right. Onward and upward. Where was I? Okay. So we were talking about, this is the tracking sheet that I've provided you. If you don't know where this is, just contact us and I'll send you a link to this. But the question was, what am I supposed to be looking at this? So I've got a video that I can send you if you request it. It's how to update this on a weekly basis, but spend no more than 5 minutes doing it. So what you're tracking here is business activity with non-clients primarily. Okay. We're not tracking client progress meetings. We're not tracking much of anything with clients. What we are tracking is, are you out there rubbing elbows with enough non-clients to make a business out of this business? Like your next client is out there in the world. Are you getting out there in the world and rubbing elbows with people or not? So, but the question is, what are the habits? What should I be looking at on this sheet? Well, it takes 5 minutes to fill this out. And then here's what I look at. First is this column. How many consecutive weeks have I had 10 or more TRF meetings? So you have to understand our lingo. And by the way, and TRF meetings, just as a shortcut, are it's TRF meetings is just another term for a personal meeting, catching up with a friend. Okay. So anytime you catch up with someone on personal, not business agenda, like I'm just deepening a relationship with someone, that we call that a TRF meeting. And we do have a lexicon of all these terms. I've been showing this every month and I'll keep doing it. If you'll write this down, mastery.link, it will give you it'll take you over to our lexicon of terms, and you'll find things like TRF meeting. And if you ever come across some term that you're not 100% sure what it is, then go look on the lexicon of terms. You'll find things like, so this is just another way of saying is, what is the number of consecutive weeks that you've had 10 or more meetings with people just catching up on personal stuff? Okay. And that's the key metric. If you're not having at least 10 a week, you don't have enough momentum to really make money doing it the way I'm doing it. So the second column is how many, what's the number of consecutive weeks where at least half of those meetings were meeting number four or more? Said another way is if you have 10 meetings, just catching up with friends, all right? How many consecutive weeks have at least five of them been the fourth time you've sat down with them to catch up? And I'm not talking about ever in your life. I'm talking about since you started tracking this, all right? So where does the magic come in? Well, if you're mastering the four skills that I just walked through, mainly the marketing one-on-one relationship skills, are you saying things in these meetings that allows everybody that knows you to understand what you do and what makes you better? So this is why. So you're not going to get referrals from people the first time they hear you say this, but you know, by the fourth time, yes, you start to get referrals or they start to open up about their significant financial issues. So the key is how many consecutive weeks have you had 10 or more interactions with non-clients just to catch up as friends? And then how many consecutive weeks have you had where at least half of them, at least five of them, are the fourth time you've sat down with them? Because, you know, if you're implementing the four skills that I'm talking about, you want to make sure that they understand what you do at a, you know, they understand the value you bring to your clients. Okay. The next column that you look at is total number of ideal clients. So that, you know, I realize you only add ideal clients every so often. I'm showing you that I always shade the cell when I've added an ideal client. So I would recommend doing that too, if I were you, but I do look at this. Am I adding ideal clients? I also look at am I adding non-ideal clients? That's the number of just comprehensive overarching strategies that I'm creating. I also want to know how many initial client interviews were conducted this week. And for those of you that work with Bill Bachrach, this is otherwise known as financial roadmap meetings. So those are the columns that I really focus on. So it's 5 minutes filling this out, and it's about 5 minutes in addition to that to ponder these columns. So it's four or five columns that matter, but hopefully that answers your question. The other thing that you need to be aware of on this tracking is keep in mind the first skill is to have ample people to talk to. So are you getting people you know to introduce you to people that you don't know? This number of names on LEIK tab on this same spreadsheet, it's a spreadsheet. So there are tabs. There is a tab that's called LEIK. I've got instructions that I can send you on filling out that tab, but the bottom line is this: LEIK stands for literally everyone I know. We recommend that you make a list of literally everyone I know, meaning you. And what this column tracks is how many names are on that list. So you want to make sure, I've already shared with you, my goal is to get 20 introductions per week. I want to get people I know to introduce me to people that I don't know at the rate of at least 20 a week. My goal is 100 a month. So, but this column right here, if you keep an eye on this, this will tell you whether you are or whether you are not skilled at getting introduced to people. Okay. So, and when I say introduced to people, I don't mean referrals. I mean getting friends to introduce you to other friends that have something in common. That's all we're talking about here. Oh, and you asked about the habits. What are the weekly habits? It's reviewing opportunities. So sitting down once a week, this is the most important thing I do. I update my numbers and then I review two lists. One list is this LEIK list. It's a list of non-clients. So I look at my list of non-clients and I review opportunities with non-clients. In other words, I had all these interactions this week. Like, are there any opportunities there? And yes or no. And then I've got the list of existing clients. It's called the ARR. It's a module in the in this program, in the Advisor Pack Monthly program. This creating your annual recurring revenue list, it's called the annual recurring revenue exercise. I'm looking for opportunities for new revenue with my current clients. So I do these two reviews. This is the weekly habit. If you're not meeting weekly with your administrative manager to review opportunities on your non-client list and on your client list, well, I would say fix that. Start doing that. That's the habit. All right. I'm going to speed this up. We're at the top of the hour. I heard you say financial advisors need to have entrepreneurial instinct to be successful in this business. What do you mean? Well, entrepreneurial instinct, I think of it as three things. Like, and I always put it in my own context. So, and I get this question a lot. How can you have personal interactions with friends with no ulterior business motive? I mean, zero. And still notice how, and still have opportunities. Like, how on earth do you have no ulterior business motives, and yet these people, everyone you know, understands what you do and understands what makes you better? Well, it's that I can enter a meeting with no ulterior business motives, yet I can still notice opportunities. So if I'm chatting with a friend and they said, "Oh yeah, my next door neighbor is selling his business," you know, and or just whatever it is, do you have your radar up? Do you have enough of an entrepreneurial instinct to recognize an opportunity when you hear it? That's number one. Number two, it's Rick Barrera, my business partner. He talks about having the ability to be in the third person. I always hear this and think about it as an out-of-body experience. And here's the skill. This is the entrepreneurial instinct. Can you be interacting with someone and step outside of the conversation and see what's happening and then act on what you're observing? In other words, well, I don't know what to call it other than the ability to be in the third person. Can you be chatting with a friend and yet kind of step out, look at this whole situation, this conversation, and see what's happening kind of as an outside observer, and then take action? So I call that entrepreneurial instinct. You can assess what's happening. And if you sense any form of an opportunity, you're assessing that and what to do about it. Okay. And then finally, it's just this metaphor that I constantly use called radar. Is your radar always up? I mean, are you, you know, I don't have any ulterior business motives, but I am aware, like, and it's not just opportunities. Like, I'm always wondering, does this friend of mine even meet my ideal client profile? Well, I don't come out and ask them. But if it's somebody that I've just met and they pull up to the meeting in a Bentley and they're wearing a $100,000 wristwatch, I'm thinking, I see a couple of clues here. My radar's up. I never asked them. I don't have any business ulterior motive, but I'm not an idiot. I got my radar up. I'm noticing things. So that's the entrepreneurial instinct. And then the other part of this question was, and what's the most successful trait? Are there any traits that if they're missing, drives failure? And I would say, yes, I see it quite often. It's lack of urgency and lack of action bias. So just to fly through this, what I mean by this, it's that are you sitting down and reviewing your accomplishments on a weekly basis? Now, if you've got a team, even just an assistant, are you reviewing the team's accomplishments every week? That's and if I were sitting in on that review, do I get a sense of urgency from you and your team? And when I say on the priorities of your firm, and I recognize client service is a top priority, but so is new revenue. So if I were to sit in on your meeting, reviewing your accomplishments for the last week, would I sense urgency regarding top priorities, including new revenue? Like, would I feel it that you are acting with urgency around generating new revenue? This is what I see lacking a lot. And would I see in that meeting a bias towards action? What is an action bias? Well, regarding these top priorities, do you have a bias towards taking action? In other words, getting things done, or rather than talking about getting things done, is your team the type that likes to talk it through and Bill Bachrach's a guy in Bill's program used to call this getting ready to get ready to get busy. So if you have an action bias and urgency on your top priorities in your business, but that always includes revenue, then I would I notice that? Because where this is missing, not only are advisors struggling with revenue and struggling acquiring clients, some of them don't, it doesn't work out. It ends up being this trait that if it's missing can be the killer, because you have to have urgency about revenue. You have to have action bias. I'm not saying don't have urgency and action bias on client service and other things you're doing. Yes, of course. But is 80% of your time invested face-to-face or on the phone with either clients or potential clients? In other words, are you rubbing elbows with enough people to notice opportunities? And is more than half of your hours each week devoted to new revenue generation? If not, there's not enough urgency. There's not enough action bias in your, and it's a problem. It's a problem. All right. I think this last question, our firm is known for its excellent. Oh, let's see. Was there another question? No. Our firm is known for its excellent money management. Our money management is spectacular. I kid you not. These were the words in the, describing his firm. Clients are here, meaning they come to the firm because of the unique way that we manage money. Our consistent performance is way above average. So the question is, how do I merge this advisor-packed methodology into this reputation that we already have, which is the reason clients come to us, which is all about managing money? Okay, just poking fun at you. It's with love, but the first thing that crossed my mind when I read this was, are you in the right program? Are you sure you're in the right program with me? Because what you're saying is our clients value our money management versus what we teach in this program, which is to look at a client and say, we will get you to your goals. Like, which is a more compelling promise to the client? You know, we're known and respected for our money management skills. Our money management team is top tier, top notch. We're best at, you know, some kind of form of money management, blah, 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 modern portfolio theory, ESG, whatever it is. We're extraordinary at this type of money management. In other words, us. That's all I hear. You're talking about us, our firm, we, you know, the words our and we are prominent. And that's where you're hanging your hat versus what we recommend. And it took me quite a while to figure this out. So I don't want you to waste the time that I did figuring this out. Here's the promise that we make to our clients. Mr. and Mrs. Client, you'll always be on track to your goals. Or if ever you drift off track, which happens, we're going to proactively call you in, have all the recommendations already prepared in order to get you back on track. Okay? You'll never miss any planning opportunities. And oh, by the way, there won't be any surprises in your life, like tax surprises that you didn't see coming. What if you're making better financial decisions, not just with your investments, but with everything financial in your life? In other words, instead of us, it's you client, you. It's all about you. It's all about the client. So let me go through this a little bit more thoroughly just to make sure you get it. These are what we call the three bottom line client outcomes. I've got data on this. This is a data-driven strategy. And not every client values all of these three things, but let's put it this way. If all of your ideal clients, or I would say if all of your ideal clients don't value at least one of these outcomes to the extent that it's worth paying your fee, then they're probably not, they don't meet your ideal client profile, more than likely. Sorry. So let's go through them. Bottom line outcome number one, you know, it's, we will get you on track to your goals and keep it that way forever. We are very focused on getting you on track and keeping you on track. So Mr. and Mrs. Client, you tell me, what's it worth to you to know that you're always on track to your goals? And if you ever drift even a notch off track, I'm going to proactively call you in, tell you you're off track, and present you with plan with recommendations that we've already created to get you back on track. What's that worth to you, knowing that you're always on track? Okay. Secondly, we are highly proactive. We are so proactive and ahead of issues. Now, we're not behind your issues. We are in front of your financial issues, so much so that you will never miss a financial planning opportunity, and you will never have any surprises in any area of your financial life. I mentioned tax surprises, but there are surprises in estate and insurance and financial planning. How would you like to have a claim on your homeowner's insurance only to find out that you weren't covered in some significant area? How about no surprises? So you tell me, Mr. and Mrs. Client, what's it worth to you to know that you'll never again miss a planning opportunity, nor will you ever have any financial surprises? What's that worth to you? And then finally, we're going to make sure that you're making better financial decisions than you have in the past. We're going to work with you, establish how you make financial decisions. We're going to identify all the major financial moves that you are going to make in the next 12 months. We're going to stay ahead of that at all times. So whether it's major purchases or identifying tax strategies or just cash reserves management or any area of your life, travel, what's it worth to you to know that you're making better financial decisions in all areas of finance? So I put the clients in the position of telling me, what are these three things worth to you? And I don't know. My experience is there is no money management out there. And by the way, you said our returns are better. I will warn you that this is a big trap. If you promise way better returns, trust me, the first year that it's not the case. And listen, all investments run in cycles. The ones that don't are Ponzi schemes. So, you know, nothing goes straight up, or for you, it'd be this way. So your investment performance, it varies over time. So the first time it doesn't exceed your client's expectations, you're going to live and die on that promise. You promise returns that are better and way above average. First time that's not true, you could get fired very easily. And it happens every day to advisors all over the world. So I would warn you totally off that one. If what you're saying is that you'd like to make these promises that I'm saying for the client, for these three bottom line client outcomes, and the client can opt themselves in, you put that on top of the four client expectations, which is your advisor pact pledge, that they've long ago given up. Any advisor anywhere would deliver on all four of these things. Yet here you are, the only game in town. And on top of that, you've got a methodology for comprehensive financial services called Truly Comprehensive Financial Services. In my case, my team for the 10 client deliverables have developed 142 deliverables checkpoints under the 10 client deliverables that we cycle through annually. So I don't know what it is for your team. If you're using our software, then you can use my 142 deliverables checkpoints. But in this program, the Advisor Pack Monthly program, I teach you to do it the same way I did it. You get your subject matter experts to tell you what are all the things that need to happen to be able to feel confident that we've delivered on these 10 client deliverables. You create your own checkpoints. So it could be 80, it could be 100, it could be 170, like whatever it is. But you are telling your client, I have a method for what we are calling truly comprehensive financial services. And it is more thorough service presented in a way that is far more expansive than any other advisor provides. And add that to the advisor pack pledge, those four expectations, and then these three bottom line client outcomes. Between those areas, you are without question the only game in town. The idea that any advisor in town could touch you or even claim that they do anything close to what you're doing is laughable. Could the client piece it together? Yeah, sure. They could go to a big firm like Ernst & Young. And we've done this. We've tested it and priced it out. They're going to pay way over six figures per year to get what you're delivering here. So you're the only game in town. That's all I can say. Well, that's it for this month. Sorry I went late. Don't forget, go to mastery.link. You'll notice if you're logged into Gmail, when you pull up this spreadsheet, you can go under File, make a copy. I recommend you do that, and you make a copy for yourself. At that point, you can edit this list so that if I say something that we have forgotten to put on here, and there's 100 terms on there, I think they're all there, but I recommend you make a copy so that you can have it and add to it if you need to. Okay. Mastery.link will take you to this lexicon of terms used in this weird advisor packed world. And as always, I keep talking about contacting us, like contact us for this or contact us for that. Like to get that tracking spreadsheet that I've provided you. It's easy to contact us. You just, there's a couple of places that you can find contact us, but it's, if you look on the screen for your name, that shows that you're logged in to the Advisor Pack Monthly software. If you pull that down, you'll see contact us. And if you'll click that, if it's a question for me, you'll need to click the line that says, I got a question for Mark, and you'll start recording. I want you to explain your question so that I can get a little more texture and background and context on what's going on. And so you just, in essence, leave me a voicemail with your question. And that's how we run the Advisor Pack Monthly program. I will select among the questions. I will either answer your question right then and promptly and get it off my desk, or if you don't hear back, I'm collecting it because I'm going to create some significant content to go through at this monthly session. All right. Listen, wish you all the best. And until next month, I'm Mark Little. Take care.